Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
With the New York Times in one hand and the Catechism of the Catholic Church in the other, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence.
America is as divided as it has been in 150 years.
Politics is symptomatic of the culture.
They don't have a personal relationship with Christ.
We've been sacramentalized, but not evangelized.
Why should Washington listen to us when our own house is in disarray?
The church's greatest riches are her people.
Share the contagious joy of being a friend of Christ.
Story after story after story. Story of people who have had inexplicable healings.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and taking a closer Catholic look at current events, issues, and ideas. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
That's beautifully said, Al.
Thanks for your voice for liberty.
It's like a homecoming each time on your program.
Clear to me that you thought these things through at a deep level.
Let's build the church, and then we'll bless the nations. Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. Thank you. Thank you for being here. One of the great achievements of modern medicine has been the development of hospice care. It really was born out of Dame Cicely Saunders' concern for the dead, acting out of deep Christian compassion. And coupled with that has been great strides in palliative care. And that's, you know, care that specialized for people with serious illness, reducing pain, amelioration of symptoms. We've made great strides there. Why, then, do we see hundreds of sick Canadians being euthanized over loneliness? Wes Smith will be joining us to go over some extraordinary statistics that beg response. So that's coming up. Also today, EWTN celebrating 39 years of Catholic truth-telling. Doug Keck, president, will be joining us to talk about Mother Angelica flipping the switch 39 years ago and why EWTN is so important in this day where there's so much Catholic confusion. Also, there's been a lot of talk about police since the death of George Floyd, and you commonly hear people calling for defunding the police. And there are places, in fact, long before the George Floyd incident, who have been trying to figure out ways of more effective policing. We're going to find out about Camden, New Jersey, because they've been used as an example of defunding the police, when in fact Sean Kennedy will talk to us. It's more like they deunionized the police, and there's more police in Camden rather than less today. We'll find out why, and we'll find out if it's been effective. We're also going to look over the assumption and the authority of Mary with Dr. Monica Miller, so stay with me. Right now, though, the headlines.
Thanks, Al. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Thursday, August 13th. It's the Feast of Blessed Mark Aviano. Today's news is brought to you by Charity Mobile, supporting pro-life and Catholic causes at CharityMobile.com. Israel and the United Arab Emirates have reached an historic deal normalizing diplomatic ties and forging a broad new relationship. Under the accord, brokered by President Trump, Israel has agreed to suspend its planned annexation of areas of the occupied West Bank. The agreement also firms up opposition to regional power Iran, which the UAE, Israel, and the United States view as the main threat in the conflict-driven Middle East. The UAE becomes the first Gulf Arab country to reach such a deal with a Jewish state. Attempts to restart economic relief negotiations between the White House and Democrats ended minutes after they started. Mike Bauer reports.
President Trump explained the quickly wrapped up talks at his press conference.
We can't give them the kind of ridiculous things that they want that have nothing to do with the China virus.
President Trump referred to $25 billion for the post office as a radical left agenda piece that he refuses to fund. He also claimed that Democrats wanted bailout money for states run poorly by Democratic leaders for years. However, even Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, a Republican, said Tuesday his state will need help covering costs associated with the coronavirus outbreak, as well as funding the $400 weekly unemployment benefit that President Trump mandated last weekend. Mike Bauer, NBC News Radio.
State-sponsored churches throughout China hoping to reopen following coronavirus lockdowns are having to pay a price. A church director in one of China's eastern provinces told Bitter Winter that state-run churches are being threatened with permanent closure if they don't donate to the Chinese Communist Party. Religious affiliation required $160,000. I'm Steve Clark, Ave Maria Radio.
There have been some innovations, of course, in, even within our generation, in medical care. And one of the great foci have been on the alleviation of suffering and palliative care. Of course, there's been the hospice movement as well. And it was largely thought that with the rise of more effective palliative care and cessation of suffering in the hospice movement, that we might be able to escape widespread physician-assisted suicide or euthanasia. Join me right now to talk about the state of affairs in the U.S., Canada, and Europe is Wes Smith. He's a senior fellow at the Discovery Institute's Center on Human Exceptionalism, a consultant to the Patients' Rights Council, and the author of 13 books, including Culture of Death, The Age of Due Harm Medicine. You can check out his blog at the Discovery Institute. And Wes, thank you for joining me again.
Thanks, Al. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I'm doing fine. You know, this is I don't think I've ever seen so much public uncertainty and chaos regarding the future as I see now. So that's a little different. But
well, you and I are of the same age bracket.
Right.
It's true. I think this is one of our most difficult times in my lifetime.
Yeah. Talk to me about this terrible set of statistics out of Canada, where a significant percentage of Canadians died because of loneliness.
Yeah, it's really an odd and awful thing that in Canada, in around 2015, the Supreme Court imposed a national right to euthanasia throughout the country. It's not just legalization, but it's actually almost a positive right to demand it. And it's so bad that in Ontario, some Catholic doctors sued to not have to kill patients who were legally qualified, and they lost that case in the Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals said you must either, if a legally qualified patient comes to you, and even if it's against your religious beliefs, even if you think homicide of an innocent person, which is what we're talking about here, is a cardinal sin, you must either do it or you must procure what's called an effective referral, meaning a doctor you know will kill, meaning every doctor in Ontario, Canada, is potentially forced to be complicit in killing patients at the potential cost of professional discipline.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, it's been shocking to me, and as you know, I've been fighting euthanasia for 27 years now. And one of the things that has shocked me most in that time is the enthusiasm with which the Canadians have embraced this euthanasia agenda. So that last year, 5,600 Canadians were killed by doctors. If you took that number into the United States based on our population differences, that would be more than 50,000 Americans killed by doctors every year, basically the same as were killed in Vietnam every year. So this is the kind of carnage that has been unleashed in Canada. And you find that I looked at they like to do these yearly reports anytime assisted suicide or euthanasia is legalized. Oh, we'll publish these statistics,
right.
And you know, they're kind of sterilely presented. But I looked into it, and I found that according to the Canadian government, not according to Wesley Smith, 13.7% of the people who asked for euthanasia in Canada did so at least in part because of loneliness and isolation. That means, and I did the math, 771 people were killed in Canada last year, at least in part because they had feelings of isolation and loneliness. That's a terrible It should be a scandal, and yet it makes barely a ripple in the Canadian system, and made no, I don't recall anybody in our country even writing about the Canadian statistics, with the exception of yours truly.
Yeah, no, I agree. I haven't seen this before. I mean, this is something that in which others can intervene, and this kind of death can be avoided. I mean, loneliness is something that can be treated,
And it's a chronic problem for people who are going through a terminal illness. And by the way, in Canada, it really doesn't have to be a terminal illness. In order to be killed by a doctor, we're talking lethal injection. We're not talking lethal prescription. Well, the doctor actually does the killing. You just have to have a diagnosed medical condition that causes irremediable suffering, not objectively, but as you define it as
right.
a patient.
Yeah.
So even if there are treatments that could reduce the suffering and you don't want that, you want to be dead, then it's considered irremediable, meaning that's a subjective criteria, not an objective one. And death has to be, quote, reasonably foreseeable. Well, that could be somebody with early stage HIV. That could be somebody, who won't be dead for many years.
Right.
And, in fact, we've seen cases in Canada where the idea of a foreseeable death was just ignored, which is often the case with these euthanasia supposed guidelines. Because here's the irony, Al. These countries, when they're trying to, when the advocates sell euthanasia or assisted suicide, they say, oh, strict guidelines will protect against abuse. Strict guidelines, strict guidelines. As soon as it's legal, those strict guidelines that they made such a big deal out of are now called obstacles to being, you know, getting what you want.
Yeah.
So the guidelines are actually now deemed obstacles, and then you go through the loosening process because you've changed your mindset 180 degrees. Right. Now being made dead is considered the beneficent act, and not being made dead is considered the harm.
Right. Talk to me about some of the other reasons that are cited for people asking to be killed.
Sure, and by the way, these statistics are pretty consistent with what we find in Oregon with assisted suicide, which you see over in the Netherlands and Belgium and so forth. So 82.1% asked to be killed because of the loss of ability to engage in enjoyable activities. That's not irremediable suffering.
Right.
Now, that's, of course, a serious concern that people have when you're going through a time of decline. It can be very difficult. But it can, with proper interventions, it can be overcome. Loss of ability to perform activities of daily living, 78.1%.
Mm-hmm.
Again, these are serious concerns. We should reach out to people going through the kind of existential anguish that such situations can cause.
Yes.
But they can be overcome. Inadequate control of pain. Now, in the United States, this is usually 3%, 4%. In Canada, it was 53.9%.
Wow.
Either inadequate control of pain or concern about it. That's a scandal and a half because pain can be alleviated. And there's been another study out of Canada that's found that only 15% of the people of Canada in their single-payer socialist system have access to quality palliative care. So that is another scandal, that 53.9% were either in pain or worried about being in pain so that they chose to be killed is a statement of no confidence in the application of quality medicine in Canada.
Wow.
Loss of dignity, 53.3%. Again, these are existential issues that can be addressed. This one really is upsetting. Perceived burden on family and friends and caregivers, 34%. In other words, some people put themselves out of their loved one's misery. That's another scandal, and yet it causes barely a ripple, because once you decide that killing is an acceptable answer to human suffering, then killing becomes the point, not really the alleviation of suffering.
Wow. It's amazing how many of these can have direct interventions and treatment. Is there any activist movement in Canada to help meet these problems, and to say we don't have to tolerate these killings.
Not really. I mean, there's the actual real energy and emphasis is on expanding euthanasia. So they're now getting ready to allow people with dementia to be killed by doctors if they ask to be killed in an advance directive. They do that in Netherlands and they do that in Belgium. There are hospices, some religious and some not religious, who resist participating in euthanasia. There's a secular hospice in Vancouver, Canada, that has refused to participate in euthanasia, and the government took away their funding because they refused to participate in euthanasia, even though, as set up, hospice by Dame Cecily Saunders, the great medical humanitarian from the UK, opposing assisted suicide was part of the hospice movement. And under hospice, as she set it up and as properly understood, if somebody becomes suicidal, the answer is suicide prevention, just as it would be any other person who becomes suicidal. But in Canada, when hospices say, it's only a 10-bed hospice, and yet the whole mighty power of the state is being directed against this hospice because they refuse to permit killing in their facility, a 10-bed facility, and there's a hospital right next door where people can go to be killed if that's what they want. So that just shows you what happens. And why this is of such concern is that Canada are closest cultural cousins. You know, when I used to, and still do, describe the horrors that euthanasia have caused in Netherlands and Belgium, advocates will say, oh, well, that's the Netherlands, that's Belgium, that's nothing like the United States. Well, Canada is very much like
the United States. That's right.
It's as close as we get to being American and not be American. So this, what is happening to our northern neighbors should be a great alarm for us and should give us added energy to fighting the assisted suicide euthanasia agenda, which is being funded by millions of dollars a year by George Soros' type foundations and is pushing in state after state after state.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you, we got about 30 seconds. Can you tell me about Michael Hixon in that amount of time?
Michael Hixon was deprived of life support in Texas because he was disabled and cognitively disabled. And it's a scandal and a half. And it just shows you how the quality of life ethic destroys ethical medicine.
Yeah. Wesley, thanks. We'll talk again.
Thank you, Al.
Wesley Smith will have all the information in our archives and also his website linked.
You can't imagine life without your faith, and Henry Ford Village wouldn't have it any other way. Residents can tune in to live televised services from our very own chapel every Sunday and online devotionals every day, making sure you stay connected, energized, and feeling good through faith the whole week through. Connection. That's what it means to be part of a faith-based community, always bringing each other closer to one another and closer to God. Let us show you what it's like. Schedule your virtual walkthrough at henryfordvillage.com today.
This Ave Maria program is brought to you in part by the nonprofit CMF Curo. Your search for affordable health care stops here. Since 2014, CMF Curo has provided Catholics with affordable health care sharing that goes beyond insurance. With programs that cost less than many COBRA and ACA-sponsored plans, CMF Curo is a Catholic health sharing experience that enables you to live fully alive while saving money. Call 1-833-GET-CURO to find affordable Catholic health care now. That's 1-833-GETCURO.
Who leads the Church on its missionary path through history? The principal agent is the Holy Spirit, according to the Catholic Catechism. Urged on by the Spirit of Christ, the Church must walk the path Christ trod, a way of poverty and obedience, service and self-sacrifice, even unto death. The blood of martyrs is the seed of Christians, says the Catechism. Throughout her history, the Church has experienced the discrepancy between the message and some of the messengers. This is why she follows the way of the cross, a way of penance and renewal, to extend Christ's reign. The process of evangelizing involves bringing the gospel to ears that have never before heard it, establishing God's presence through Christian communities and eventually local churches. There will be times of defeat as the Church touches individuals and communities only reached by degrees. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
This is Father Frank Pavone of Priests for Life. In a few days, we will celebrate the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary. Like every feast, it is a celebration of Jesus Christ. This feast shows us that because of her unique role as his mother, Mary received from Jesus a full share, body and soul, in his victory over death. The feast is a reminder that in Christ we all will share the resurrection of the body. Mary has it now, because in the human family which God decided to join, there can be no closer bond than mother and child. They belong together, their destinies are intertwined. That's one of the central messages of the pro-life movement. To love and care for a mother necessarily means protecting, loving, and caring for her child. Mothers can never benefit from the destruction of their children. This is Father Frank Pavone on Ave Maria Radio.
Missed the name of the guest on today's Cresta in the Afternoon or his or her book? Log on to AveMariaRadio.net. Click Archive in the upper right corner. Select and search Cresta in the Afternoon and explore from there. You can hear past episodes, delve into bios, read related articles, purchase books, and find links to websites, all by clicking on the show notes from each hour. Browse AveMariaRadio.net and bookmark it today. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
Cresta in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization, Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 80% of the referral check to Ave Maria Radio and Students for Life. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
I'm Al Cresta. Well, this month, EWTN is celebrating 39 years since Mother Angelica flipped the switch and launched EWTN. She launched the network with these words, quote, "May this first Catholic satellite television network be a tribute to the beauty of your church." Now, EWTN has gone on, of course, to provide extraordinary programming and also to right many wrongs within at least American Catholicism. And joining me right now to talk about EWTN is Doug Keck, President and Chief Operating Officer. Doug, good to have you back.
It's great to be on, Al. It's always great to be with you. And it's funny because I showed up right before the 15th anniversary. That's when I came in 96. It was that summer that we used because it came in July and they were doing the show that August. I remember Jeff Cavins and Raymond working on it. It was kind of a fun show. It was one of the first things I got involved with. So it's, 24 years later, here we are with the Jack Benny anniversary.
Was there any doubt in Mother's mind what the objective of EWTN was? I mean, at the beginning, what was she thinking?
Well, I think in some ways, I think Mother always wanted to do what God wanted her to do, and I think she always remained open to that direction. I think you could probably make a case that there was kind of a critical change in focus that happened in 93 post the youth event in Denver.
I remember that.
You know, with kind of Mother's Corner and things like that. And I think at that point it seemed to be that she realized that besides being a generically positive, Catholic with Christian overtone kind of thing, that she really needed to focus and in some ways her attention on Catholics themselves who really needed to be recatechized because it was clear, I think, to her that this was not happening based on the kinds of things that she saw going on. And I think it just solidified itself with the event with the young lady playing Jesus in the Stations of the Cross event, which really was the one that just put her over the edge.
Yeah, yeah. No, I do remember that. Recently, we have this the National Catholic Reporter, not to be confused with the National Catholic Register. The Reporter is actually known as a dissident publication, frequently disagreeing with church teaching. But there was...
Do they even print anymore? I don't know. Are they still printing?
I don't know. I see them online. I don't know if I've got any paper. National Catholic Reporter for a while. But here's what I wanted to bring up, because this is an incredible cogent example for why EWTN exists. The executive editor over there, Heidi Schlumpf, came out with a statement that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is the future of the Catholic Church. Now, this is a woman who has been explicitly so left that you could call her socialist. She's pro-abortion. And what happened? How does one get to say she's the future of the Catholic Church? If that's the case, then the Catholic Church is going to be unfaithful to its own teaching.
Right. Well, I think that maybe she may be the face of the future, or some particular Catholics or people who will continue to claim that they're Catholic going forward. But it's certainly not the Church of Jesus Christ, and it's not going to continue. And whatever that is going to die off, like all of the mainline churches that are basically dying off. Many of them, if they didn't have buildings, you wouldn't know they existed.
Yeah.
So, you know, the reality is that's a temptation we have to be concerned about as well. That's why I think it's so important that the lay people are out there standing up for the truth of the faith. That's certainly what Mother did. Mm-hmm. There's many bishops and good friends of the network as well who've said if it wasn't for Mother Angelica and EWTN, Archbishop Chaput, Father Benedict Groeschel of late memory would say the same thing. They don't know what would have happened in the United States. And quite honestly, for as many problems as we have here, the Catholic Church, at least in the sense of the laity and the people, the everyday Catholic pew sitter, we're probably in the best shape of a lot of churches around the world.
That's what I've heard. And I know that it's sometimes hard for some of us to accept. But in fact, American Catholics, and I by that I mean those who do embrace the teaching of the church, are regular in mass attendance, are involved in prayer groups and Bible studies and go on retreat and, you know, Eucharistic adoration. Those lay Catholics, who I think are the ones Pope Benedict talked about as exercising co-responsibility for the church, we actually have a significant percentage of those kind of Catholics in the United States. Those who have come from outside the states, looking at what we have going on here, are amazed. They see us as a particularly strong Catholic community.
Right, because I think even the Holy Father, Francis, when he came over, he had never been to the United States before. I think he had some dim views of the United States, certainly from an economic perspective. I'm not sure that those have changed per se, but I think his understanding of the vibrancy and the faith-filled nature of the Catholics in the United States, I think, impressed him.
Yeah. Well, one of the problems that is endemic, and you see it in the history of Christianity, especially in the West since the 19th century, and that is the temptation to reduce the gospel, reduce Christian faith to ethics, behavior. Actually, I was looking yesterday at Kamala Harris's spiritual background, and she, over and over again, when she refers to Christianity or Hinduism, her focus is on what people ought to do, not about who God is or what we owe God or what any scheme of salvation that is there. Her faith has been reduced to ethics. And this has been going on in the mainline Protestant churches since the late 19th century. And about the only two communities that have resisted that are evangelical Protestants, Bible-based Protestantism, and the Catholic Church.
we haven't fallen largely for that problem.
Absolutely. And I think the problem is a lot of these people who rely on ethics aren't very ethical. So,
yeah, well,
I
that's mean, right.
It's not, even, it's not even that their ethics are right or on you know, they're incredibly, ethics can't be subjective. There has to be some consistency to them. And, you know, there was a quote that I saw of Mother Angelica remind me of what you said. She said, I had heard today that we're awesomely selfish for fighting abortion. So it means that anybody's conscience, as unenlightened as it might be, is more important than a baby torn apart and burned black.
Yeah.
And I think that whole idea of, you know, don't say anything, you'll make people uncomfortable, they won't be happy, you know, we have to attract people, you know, those kinds of things, which none of those things are bad, but they're only bad when they obscure the truth, because the truth is what attracts people to EWTN and to the Catholic Church. I mean, who wants to become part of a church about the guy who founded it, died, was crucified?
Right.
Who wants to watch a network with an old nun telling you that you better shape up, bub? Yeah. But they do, and it's because it's the truth.
Yeah, that's right. It has its own appeal and its own satisfaction. And, of course, we know that from all the testimonies that we've got here. Anything going on in TV with new films, new projects?
Well, we always have a lot of things going on, even with, you know, obviously COVID-19. We've done a lot more remote work. We've been doing book interviews and things like that, live shows and shots from around the world using technology like everybody else has been doing. We are happy to announce that Mike O'Neill, the, you know, the Miracle Hunter,
yeah,
who's
sure.
done some shows, he's coming on board full-time with us.
Oh, good.
At
good.
The end of this month, he's going to be adding his radio show to our weekend lineup. And he will continue to do the They Might Be Saints programs we've been doing for several years. I just saw some wonderful footage shot in Europe for us for our ongoing series on the Doctors of the Church. This one on Ambrose, beautiful reproductions, and that's exciting. We're rolling out each month our episodes on the Reformation. Going right through it, and then on Reformation Day on the 31st, we'll run the entire series. People can look for that. We've been running the Wolf in Sheep's Clothing every week to make people up to speed on what socialism actually is and mm-hmm. how it's impacted the church, let alone the country. And we have the new one, the Gender Agenda, which, you know, we have all the pieces together, and it's we're
nice.
Looking seriously now at the final version, and we hope to roll it out sometime next month, and people can look forward to that. It has the same producers, same team that put together the wonderful Wolf in Sheep's Clothing. This one takes a look at what's going on in the gender world out there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's amazing because it took us about 2 years to get the Saul Alinsky piece up.
I remember.
And it was
yeah.
amazing how prescient that turned out to be. And, it, you know, this one's been in the works for 2 years, too. And it's you know, that whole gender bending situation has just gotten worse and worse.
Yeah, and it doesn't show any sign of relenting, from what I can see. There's more litigation in this area. In fact, I go back to Time magazine cover story. It must be at least five years mm-hmm. ago now, which said transgenderism is the next great civil rights movement. And so they've, again, put a significant amount of political and social capital behind
right,
that.
Right. You know? Well, once you get into the idea of the fact that people are who they decide they are, then how can you deny anybody anything? I mean, and that's why I think it matters to people who ends up on the Supreme Court. I think it matters who the federal judges are, because many of these things are not legislated.
Right.
They're really decided at the bench, and they've been done that way because the reality is the vast majority of people don't agree with a lot of these decisions, but they come down because they're a reinterpretation of law. And that's why an election like this one is so important, and that's why, you know, you really have to think long and hard. And Mother would say, before you vote, make sure you pray yeah. about who you're voting for. And I can tell people, you know, Mother was all about the infant Jesus and all about El Divino Niño. That was her insight. That was the vision she had for her shrine. And if that doesn't tell you about what she saw as the ultimate issue
yeah.
that trumps all issues, then maybe I need to spell out that life was the issue for Mother Angelica.
Yeah. Jesus was alive in the womb. John the Baptist was alive in the womb and even danced at the approach of Jesus. Unborn human life needs protection. Doug, thanks much. We'll talk
pleasure.
Soon. Yeah.
God
Doug
bless
Keck.
Hell.
Yeah, Doug Keck, President and Chief Operating Officer, EWTN.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999. The Archdiocese of Detroit Cemeteries would like to invite you to three of our locations to participate in our annual St. John Vianney Volunteer Cleaning Day, Saturday, August 15th, between the hours of 9 a.m. and 12 noon. Please join our faith community as we honor our beloved deceased by cleaning headstones at three of our locations, Holy Sepulchre in Southfield, Our Lady of Hope in Brownstown, and St. Joseph Cemetery in Monroe. Refreshments will be served. For more information, please call 248-350-1900.
Light of the East, weekends on Ave Maria Radio.
I am Father Thomas Loya. This week on Ave Maria, civilization will go by way of the family, and these institutions are being attacked like never before. It is the liturgy of the church and the domestic church that will help marriage and family remain bright.
Saturday evenings at 8:30 and Sunday mornings at 9 on 990 WDEO Ave Maria Radio.
If you believe in the power of prayer, Ave Maria Radio invites you to look at their website to submit a prayer request at AveMariaRadio.net. Your prayer requests are shared with hundreds at the Dominican Sisters of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist, the Servants of God's Love, the Monastery of the Blessed Sacrament Cloistered Nuns, the Family of Faith Apostolate, and the staff of Ave Maria Radio. Just go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the Community tab to submit your prayer request today.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchuk.
Stress is contagious, even for toddlers. A new study by the University of Cambridge found that even after controlling for temperament, the more stressed moms and dads felt, the more their toddlers tended to be clingy, tantruming, whiny, and defiant. In general, kids are terrific emotional barometers. Little ones especially are always taking their emotional cues from us, even when we think we're keeping it to ourselves. Parents' stress plays out in our facial expressions, our posture, our attitudes, and our ability to pay attention, all things our kids attend to closely. When our kids notice us feeling stressed, it makes them feel unsafe and causes them to act out. If your little one seems off, a good first step is asking yourself how you're managing your own stress level. An ounce of self-care can sometimes be worth a pound of discipline. I'm Dr. Greg Popchuk, but you can call me Family.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
Brought to you by the nonprofit Seton Home Study.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Garetti here. My wife and I have used Seton Home curriculum for our homeschooling. One of the great things about it, you learn about your faith, not just in religion, but history and English and science and reading. Their curriculum uses saints as role models. I don't think they've used me yet. Children are prepared to rationally explain and defend their faith. It permeates the instruction. You want to give your kids not only a top-notch education, but an understanding of their faith as it permeates the subjects that matter in their lives. I don't know if there's too much better than Seton homeschooling. We used it a lot. You are the best teacher for all of that. Let Seton get right beside you and give you the material you need. Go to SetonHome.org. SetonHome.org.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. Since the death of George Floyd, we've heard calls to, quote, defund the police. And in fact, it's efforts have been made in Minneapolis and Seattle to do so. I think in Seattle they actually, the city council voted on it to do so. And during this whole discussion, you'll hear people cite Camden, New Jersey as an example of a city that successfully, quote, defunded its police. But is that what's really happened? My guest, Sean Kennedy, is a visiting fellow at the Maryland Public Policy Institute, where his research focuses on criminal justice. And he, in fact, has looked at the case of Camden, New Jersey. He's also written on Baltimore. His works appeared in national publications like the Chicago Tribune, CNN.com, Washington Post. And it's a great pleasure to have you with me, Sean. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much.
Let's talk. When did Camden begin its reform of its police department? How far back does that go?
It's about 10 years ago that Camden did this. So this obviously predates so many of the current discussions.
Right.
It predates, obviously, the Michael Brown incident in Ferguson, Missouri,
right,
and the riots in Baltimore, both in 2015, 2014. So it predated both of those by a good amount of time, and was for, honestly, a completely different reason than the social unrest that we're seeing now.
Right. When people appeal to Camden, they must be appealing to Camden because Camden's had some measure of success in the reforms that they did implement. Are the police more effective in Camden today than they were 10 years ago?
The police are more effective, and the public safety system as a whole is more effective, but those gains are not necessarily set in stone. They can always backslide,
right,
and we're currently seeing, as you see across the country, and Camden's rates are similarly going up. We've seen about a 50% rise, 25 to 50% rise in major cities across America in shootings and murder, and other violent crimes have also risen, while property crime has continued to decline, but we are seeing somewhat of a turnaround from the progress we made in the last 3 years.
Okay. So what is it that Camden actually did to, quote, reimagine policing?
Well, they didn't much reimagine the police, as they disbanded and reformed the police. And I don't mean reformed as a single word. I mean re-formed,
yeah, okay,
the police. They effectively disbanded them, not for the purposes of ending anything about the policing structure. The leadership was changed and other things like that. They fired every single officer and then called back about a third of the force and said, you're hired, and then went out and recruited heavily to get the remainder of the needed officers. But they had a police force that was riddled with corruption, and there were abusive force complaints. And the large issue that Camden faced was, under laws, and this is a problem across the country, is that under police union rules that apply to all unions, teacher unions in the public schools, and government employees, your friendly DMV employee, they have a very elaborate appeal system for disciplinary and especially termination processes.
Yes.
To fire any government employee, including the police, is very difficult. And therefore, they basically got an end run around that, saying that so much of our police force is corrupt. We know they're corrupt, but trying to trot them each through effectively police court would be so onerous and impossible and take so long that it was easier to just lay off everyone.
Wow.
And reconstitute it on a municipal level, as on a county level instead of a city level,
and
rehire the good cops and keep the bad cops out the door.
Did that render the union impotent then?
Absolutely. I mean, effectively, yeah, they don't have a union. There may be a police association or organization, but
yeah,
they don't have any power anymore in that department, because the new department, because it was technically a different entity. It's almost like if Seattle had disbanded its police tomorrow, and then they created the King County Police for municipal urban areas, they renamed it,
yeah,
and it's really just the Seattle Police without the same name, they would then basically say, oh, well, this is a new entity, our your union contract is void, and we'll sign a new contract, but we're not signing on the old terms.
Right.
And that's what they've done in Camden.
Wow. So Camden didn't abolish the police. They simply reformed, meaning they actually literally fired everybody and then put together a new police department utilizing about one-third of the previous officers. That enabled, because they were not burdened by union rules. And so did they hire more or less police officers?
They have fewer officers now, but I would argue they have better officers now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the larger issue. It's not that I would argue that 99% of cops are good cops. Now, just like in teaching, you could be a good person and not be good at your job.
Yeah, sure.
And you have no ill intent, but you're not very effective. So they basically went out of their way to get rid of the ineffective ones. Now, Camden was particularly notorious for having bad cops. And more than anything, I think this is important for anyone who thinks about organizations. So much of a problem isn't an individual necessarily. It's both leadership and organizational culture. And what they effectively did was shock treatment to the officers. Now, if you're one of the borderline officers they rehired, you have a totally new outlook on life.
Yeah.
If they just disbanded the cops and then rehired you, your willingness to go along with maybe petty, you know, infractions is nil now because you realize there are consequences.
Yeah.
In so many things, there are no consequences for teachers or for DMV employees, and including police officers who obviously have a lot more power. I mean, let's put it bluntly, the police are given something in our civilized society that we want them to have, which is a monopoly on violence. And when somebody has the power of life and death, obviously it has to be justified, and they have to be well-trained,
yep,
well-resourced, and they have to be moral.
Yeah, yeah, that, absolutely. If the immoral use of force or violence undermines a community very quickly, people hate unfairness. They hate being brutalized. They hate examples of it. They hate stories about it. Did Camden's violent crime go down over those years after the police had been, quote, reformed?
Yes, it did. It went down significantly. Now, I will put a caveat on that. Violent crime had been declining significantly across the country.
Yeah, okay.
From the period in which they disbanded it until about 2015, when it spiked again 2015, 2014, and then it has gone down again in 2017, 2018, and now 2019 we may be at even, and then unfortunately even with COVID as sort of a pause button, we're seeing an increase again. But relative all those years, we saw a steep decline. If you look at 2010 figures for violent crime in pretty much any large community in America, they are significantly higher than they were even after the 2016 spike. So we've seen a decline in Camden. Now, some of that obviously is larger effects, macro effects than micro, but Camden has done a great job. And you pointed out something I think is important. What was so effective about getting better police wasn't just that the cops were doing a better job tamping down on crime. Camden now has a much more successful community police relationship,
mm-hmm,
and that creates what people call the virtuous cycle.
Yeah.
And is, I don't know if you've ever watched a cop show where they can't get the witness to cooperate, but if you're in a highly urban area that is dangerous and things like that, you have a dilemma if you witness some violent crime, specifically even a murder, because you know for a fact the suspects who you can identify will commit violence, and
right,
they have no compunction about,
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
But do you trust that the police will protect you in the interim and in the long term make sure that they actually effectively prosecute that individual? When you build trust in the community that will happen, that people will be protected and that the bad guys will go to jail, it creates a virtuous cycle because now the next witness says, hey, I heard Joe Johns went to prison because Jane testified against him.
Yeah.
I'm going to testify because I believe the police will do the right thing. When the opposite occurs and the police don't protect you and a witness is killed or somebody's intimidated, then that also has a cascading effect. So one of the great successes of Camden and other departments that work effectively is to effectively build trust that they're going to do the right thing on your behalf, do right by you, and therefore you'll see positive outcomes in the justice system.
Beautiful. I lived in Detroit for 10 years in a low-income area, and I was surprised at how suspicious all my neighbors were about police. They didn't want to call the police. They didn't want to cooperate with police. And we had significant crime, even violent crime, in this particular area of Detroit. And, I didn't at the time understand why, but since then, I suppose it's because of the reason you just pointed out. They had ceased trusting that the police were actually there for their own benefit.
Exactly, and put it another way, the justice has to be truly what justice means, fair, equal, and also compassionate. So if you're a person who brother or cousin or whatever is getting harassed by the cops and he's doing nothing wrong,
right?
But the bad guy is not getting harassed by the cops, or at least isn't going to prison for things that he should go to prison on, you're very mistrusting of the police, not just because they harassed you and they went after you and you feel that was unjust, but because at the end of the day, your actual function is not being fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
there's sort of to the opposite of the virtuous cycle, there's a vicious cycle of I don't trust the cops because they harassed my cousin. I don't trust the cops because the bad guy got away with it.
Yeah, yeah. Very good. Did you take a look at what Seattle is doing at all?
I have, and what's striking about Seattle's decisions, I mean, as far as I know, the mayor is planning to veto, which is interesting because she was such a Chaz, the occupied zone promoter, and has kind of turned a corner. I was like to joke some of these individuals who are so gung-ho for these things that are against law and order often get what they say mugged by reality.
Right.
And I think she woke up one day and said, oh, wait, no police. That's bad. I don't know if you know this, but the protesters showed up at her house and were threatening
right.
her. And luckily, she had a police detail.
Right.
So she, I don't know if they finally, but I know this council voted to defund or at least cut the budget significantly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just sort of forced out the police chief, who was actually an African-American woman and was probably the best option to maintain both law and order and to move towards reforms that may be necessary because both of her position and her track record. And now they're going to choose either someone who's unqualified or someone who's not in line with what their defund position is.
Mm.
And
yeah.
that could be a real nightmare, and it's a real travesty. One thing I want to say, though, that's interesting is you mentioned Detroit. Gallup put out a poll recently on this broadly on large demographic categories, white, black, Hispanic, and so forth. But there was a sub study by another organization with Gallup in conjunction with Gallup of what they call fragile communities, which your neighborhood may consist of. And they did Detroit, they did Chicago, Southside, they did a number of places that are inner city neighborhoods. And they asked the black, white, and Hispanic residents, do you want more police or less police in your neighborhood? And 52% sorry, of black residents said that they wanted more police.
Nah.
Another 40-something percent wanted the same amount of police, and only 8% wanted no
wow.
less police.
So
what's so striking is that, but I want to put a caveat on that.
Sean, they unfortunately, have... we're out of time. We'll talk again. This is great. Thank you so much for contributing to the work of Ave Maria Radio. You become a co-worker with us in the proclamation of the gospel. Gregory in Omaha, Nebraska, and Michelle in East Bernard, Texas, Kenneth in Dryden, Michigan, Gail in Royal Oak, Michigan, and Roy and Mary Jo in Saline, Michigan. Let me invite all of you to become partners with us in this work of the new evangelization at AveMariaRadio.net or the Ave Maria Radio app. Just hit the donate button. Thank you.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popcha.
Want a simple way to add years to your life? Practice optimism. In a study of over 70,000 people, researchers at Boston University found that optimistic people lived up to 15% longer and were 70% more likely to live past 85 than less optimistic people. Optimism is the belief that we can make good things happen, even when things are going badly. Optimism isn't a trait you have or you don't. It's a skill we can all cultivate. As St. Paul says in Romans 8:28, we know that all things work for the good of those who love God.
Get in the habit of asking God to help you make good things happen, even out of the bad things life throws at you. That simple habit might unlock the secret to a long and abundant life. I'm Dr. Greg Popcheck, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. We're coming up, of course, on the Feast of the Ascension. The Assumption. And the Assumption, of course, is that remarkable event in history in which the Blessed Virgin Mary was assumed bodily into heaven. And because of that, I thought it would be good for us to sit down and take a look at who the Blessed Virgin is, especially in relationship to authority. And nobody's done that better than my guest coming up next hour, Dr. Monica Miller, in her book, The Authority of Women in the Catholic Church. So often when people think of the Blessed Virgin, they're tying her, authority to motherhood, and by that they are often thinking the home, merely the home. But authority in the case of the Blessed Virgin, the Queen of Heaven, goes to something much deeper than just home life. It has to do with life-giving power. We're going to talk that over with Dr. Miller coming up on the other side of the news break today. But this question of the Assumption of Mary is, I know non-Catholic Christians have a difficult time with it. We'll also talk a little bit about the apologetics of defending the dogma. I'm Al Cresta. Stay with me.
This hour of Cresta in the Afternoon is co-produced by Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
On the next Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
We'll keep you closely connected to the faith with the latest from Rome, the front lines of the pro-life movement, and we'll also take a look at other crucial issues facing you and your family in our one holy Catholic and apostolic church.
Catholic Connection, weekday mornings at 8 a.m. on 990 WDEO.
I'm Dr. Stan Williams. Contemplate the universe with me.
And so God looked at everything he had made and found it very good.
I suppose that includes what some biologists call junk DNA, what cosmologists call dark matter, what physicists suggest are hidden dimensions, or how time can distort space and gravity twist light. Atheists claim that science has the answers to everything, but in fact, as humans, when it comes to most of the universe, we have no idea. In our wisdom, we call the ubiquitous junk, dark, hidden, distorted, and twisted. Can the mysteries of the universe be all those things and still be very good? Impossible? We have no idea. But God knows, and one day you will too. At AveMariaRadio.net, under Resources, explore the universe with me. I'm Dr. Stan Williams.
We recently witnessed with shock the violent protests, looting, and riots that erupted following the appalling and unnecessary death of George Floyd at the hands of a white police officer in Minneapolis, Minnesota. The officers involved have been criminally charged, appropriately so, but that is not enough for the anarchists behind the Black Lives Matter movement. If anyone thinks that this
in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
With the New York Times in one hand and the Catechism of the Catholic Church in the other, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence.
America is as divided as it has been in 150 years.
Politics is symptomatic of the culture.
They don't have a personal relationship with Christ.
We've been sacramentalized, but not evangelized.
Why should Washington listen to us when our own house is in disarray?
The church's greatest riches are her people.
Share the contagious joy of being a friend of Christ.
Story after story after story of people who have had inexplicable healings.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and taking a closer Catholic look at current events, issues, and ideas. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
That's beautifully said, Al.
Thanks for your voice for liberty.
It's like a homecoming each time on your program.
Clear to me that you thought these things through at a deep level.
Let's build the church, and then we'll bless the nations. Well, good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta. Glad to be back. We've got one more hour ahead talking about the things that matter most. And coming up, we have the Feast of the Assumption. This is the feast in which we honor the Blessed Virgin Mary and her bodily being assumed bodily into heaven. It really is a singular event in the history of the world. There's nothing quite like it. Yes, there have been other examples of people leaving this earth in unusual ways. You know, there's Elijah in chariot, there's Enoch, but those are not the same as the assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary. Her assumption is rooted directly in her union with Jesus. So, with me today to talk about the assumption and the authority of Mary is Dr. Monica Miller. And I think this question of authority in Mary is probably one we haven't discussed before on this program. And Mary's been honored, of course, throughout the ages because of her model as a mother. But in motherhood in our culture is not very held up in high esteem any longer. And so the question is then, what does Mary's motherhood mean in a generation that no longer appears to appreciate or honor motherhood? And what does authority have to do with motherhood as well? Exactly what do we mean when we talk about authority? All that's coming up in this next hour and a whole lot more. But first, to the headlines.
Thanks, Al. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Thursday, August 13th. It's the Feast of Blessed Mark Aviano. Today's news is brought to you by Charity Mobile, supporting pro-life and Catholic causes at charitymobile.com. White House Senior Advisor Jared Kushner is cheering the new peace agreement between Israel and the United Arab Emirates.
I want to start today by congratulating the people of Israel and the people of the United Arab Emirates.
Kushner told reporters that it's an historic breakthrough and a day for peace. The deal normalizes relations between Israel and the United Arab Emirates. National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien noted that a peace agreement in the volatile Middle East is a very rare thing. O'Brien also said that President Trump should be seriously considered for a Nobel Peace Prize. The Nebraska legislature has passed a ban on dilution and evacuation abortions in the state. The vote was 33-8 with one abstaining. State Senator Suzanne Geis introduced the bill in January. 21 state senators joined the legislation as co-sponsors upon its introduction, with another four joining later. The bill now goes to the desk of Governor Pete Ricketts, who supports the ban, to be signed into law. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says she'll continue to push for the U.S. Postal Service to be properly funded before November's elections. President Trump said this morning that funding for mail-in voting will become a major roadblock for a new stimulus package. Pelosi said what's happening in the Postal Service undermines, quote, the health of our democracy. The Postal Service is expecting a lot more mail-in ballots this November because of the pandemic. The FBI will be joining the investigation into a massive explosion in Beirut that killed hundreds. Lebanese officials have promised to do a complete investigation into the blast that destroyed a huge section of the city. The leader of Lebanon's government has announced that they'll step down as soon as new leaders are determined. I'm Steve Clark, Ave Maria, Radio News.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. This weekend we'll be celebrating the Feast of the Assumption, and Dr. Monica Miller has written extensively on the authority of women in the Catholic Church, and in fact, in two books, she also explores the authority of Mary. And I thought this might be interesting to put together the assumption and the authority of Mary. Dr. Miller is a director of Citizens for Pro-Life Society and the author of many books, including The Authority of Women in the Catholic Church, also Abandoned, extraordinary memoir, The Untold Story of the Abortion Wars, and The Theology of the Passion of the Christ, the Mel Gibson movie. It's good to see you again.
Yeah, it's good to see you face to face.
How are things going with the protest up in Milwaukee?
Well, we're going to have a lot of people.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of response.
That's good.
So that's encouraging.
Yeah.
But as a pro-life leader, my slogan is, I know I'll be there.
Mm-hmm.
And then if a few other people show up, then it's a success.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I know I'll be there.
Right. That's something you learned to say.
Yes, right.
Yeah, early on.
Yep.
So, well, good. I hope, by the way, for more information on that, people go where?
They need to email us at prolifesociety.com on the contact tab.
Okay.
And let us know that you want to participate, and we will send you the itinerary.
All right.
Yep.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the authority of Mary. I was looking at your chapter, which is explicit on this topic, in her book, The Authority of Women in the Catholic Church, and you've actually treated this twice. This is your earlier work was sexuality in authority in the Catholic Church. That's more more academic?
Yeah, it would be considered more for scholars, though I think somebody with a couple years of theology behind them, or you know, if you have a theological background, you should probably be able to get through sexuality and authority in the Catholic Church. But chapter 4 in that book is totally on the authority of Mary, and much of what is in sexuality and authority is also then poured into the more popular, shall we say, version, the authority of women in the Catholic
That's
Church.
Right.
It was published by Emmaus Publishing.
Let's talk a little bit about just terms here. What is authority? What's it mean? How's it defined?
Right. Well, one of the most misunderstood things in the history of mankind. Authority, what it is not, and where most of the mistakes are made, is that there is that authority is often synonymous with power. And then power means quantifiable strength.
Mm-hmm.
How much money do I have? How big is my army? How much can I lift in weight? What we can measure. So force and power. And then you have, of course, now the strength, measurable strength to dominate, to dictate. Now, one might say to guide, to nurture. But that means really then authority has to do with giving life. Authentic authority, true authority is life-giving.
So,
and I think that begins with God.
Yes.
When we say in the Creed, I believe in one God, the Father, the Almighty. Now, it sounds like we're confessing that God has all the strength and all the power, and he's omnipotent. Okay, fine. But where's the qualifier, the creator of heaven and earth?
Yeah.
So he uses his power, his divine power to create life. And so we need to critique and to scrutinize if somebody is exercising authority, what are they really doing, and are they giving life?
Yeah.
And so certainly authority in the Catholic Church, in the Christian religion, is that kind of authority. And my argument in sexuality and authority in the Catholic Church is that authority is differentiated. And it is gender specific.
Okay, so authority is gender specific. So there's a male
authority and a female authority. Correct.
Okay.
And why do I argue that? Is because the primary sign, I don't think it's just a sign. I think it's the metaphysics of the covenant is nuptially ordered. The covenant of redemption is a marriage. God has married a people, and so there is right there we're talking about a covenant is nuptially ordered, and therefore it is a dialogue between two partners who are not the same. And that that's a very important tenet of Judeo-Christianity. God is not matter.
Right.
And, well, in Jesus we can get to that. But God cannot be collapsed into matter.
Right.
Yet, what makes Judaism in particular absolutely different from its ancient pagan neighbors is that it affirms that while God is not nature, God and nature are in harmony.
Mm-hmm.
God and nature are in a unity.
Yeah, this is an important distinction to make. It shows up in the difference even in Catholic mysticism versus, you know, Hindu
Eastern
mysticism, New Age mysticism, and that is the self in Catholic mysticism is in union
and is real
and is real yeah. and is not simply extinguished
or absorbed back into the divine, and then the deity exhausts reality.
Right.
So there's no existence or essence outside of divinity. That is, Judeo-Christianity just puts that to bed.
Right. And that's because covenant is at the heart.
Exactly. So
in covenant, you've got to preserve the two members of the covenant.
And this world speaks back to God. Yeah. And it's a real word.
Yeah.
That creates the unity. So it's not, God is not, our religion, Al, is not a monologue. God is not doing all the talking. God is looking for and expects a response, and that response actually means that the human being can partner with God in the accomplishment of redemption. And my argument is that the primary voice of that response is feminine. It's on the side of the feminine church, the Mater Ecclesia, and Mary is the model for the church. The church is designed and erected according to a Marian model. She is the proto. Mary is the proto church.
Mm-hmm.
So that dialogue, that unity between Christ and his people has that Marian dimension built into it. And it's a metaphysic. This is, you take one little thread out of that and the whole thing can unravel. And of course, if we don't respect that there is an ontological essence to being male and female. And of course, now our culture is just, let's be honest, kind of whacked out on these issues.
It seems as though our culture has dropped the idea that there's an essence of maleness or femaleness, and largely interchangeable beings.
I argue, and kind of fond of saying that there's one heresy that will never die. It'll be there 5 minutes before the second coming of Jesus, Gnosticism.
Mm-hmm.
Gnosticism is the heresy that will last until the end of time.
Yeah.
That somehow or another, the world of matter is opposed to the spirit. And that infected, I mean, even early, fathers of the church, because of Neoplatonism is a dualist religious system or philosophical system. For example, in my book, in the first chapter, section, and I might actually have it in the other book as well, The Authority, I'm pretty sure I do. I found this absolutely fascinating. And on the issue of, in a way, frankly, the Assumption of Mary, St. Augustine, will have that definite flavor to his approach to Catholicism that is indebted to Neoplatonism.
Right.
Okay, but then there are times that St. Augustine has to drop Plato like a hot potato because he can't be converted.
Right.
And so he is confronted with a question. So here we go.
Yeah.
The question that St. Augustine had to answer, and from coming from Christians, will women at the end of time, in the second coming of Jesus, will women rise from the dead as women, or will they become males?
Wow.
Right? Because, okay, males we can deal with. It's women that are so much on the side of the world of matter that they just, the female body is so corrupt, so,
Yeah, we talk about Mother Earth.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Okay. So St. Augustine, I mean, you could probably see him rolling his eyes, but he had to correct that, right? Yeah. He says, of course not. Women will rise as women because it's nature and God has created this nature, which can be perfected. Okay. Now, when we talk about the Assumption of Mary, what can that teach us right now in our own cultural milieu? Mm-hmm. That gender is eternal. Mm-hmm. That when you rise, you will rise as male or female.
It's a
part
bodily,
of your absolute constitutive of your identity.
Right.
It's not just this costume that's slapped on top
of
your soul.
I'll never be a female.
You will never be a female. You're not going. You're going to come back as your body, your very body, the one that you have right now. Perfected.
Yeah, glorified.
Glorified.
Right.
But you will be forever a man or a woman. And the Assumption of Mary teaches us that.
Yeah. That's interesting.
She's mother now. She's female now.
Yeah.
Right? She's queen, not king, not whatever. Queen of heaven now. Queen of the apostles. Queen of all saints. Queen.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very, very important. And to think, too, that in modern existential thought, there's this idea that facticity is a source of something to be rebelled against.
That it limits.
That's right. And so the male, I can see certain men rebelling against the idea that they'll never be able to experience womanhood. What do you mean limiting me like that?
Mm.
But we're creatures.
Yes.
And we will always be creatures, even though we'll be in union with the eternal.
Well, and the other problem with that approach, that my gender somehow limits me, is the failure to understand that gender is sacramental, that you are actually speaking. In fact, I argue that male and female sexuality is the first sacrament. Because even go to St. Paul chapter 5.
Yeah, that's true. That's his mystery passage.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, hold it there, Monica. We'll continue back. My guest, Dr. Monica Miller, our topic, The Authority of Mary. We're also tying it to the Feast of the Assumption. That's coming up this weekend. I'm Al Cresta. We'll be right back.
I wrote a new book called Wheat and Tares as a way to approach the sexual abuse crisis by clergy in the Catholic Church. I hope that this book would be something that came out of my prayer for a lot of months and would be able to help inform your prayer.
Wheat and Tares, Restoring the Moral Vision of a Scandalized Church by Father Mitch Pacwa. Now available at EWTNRC.com.
The breadth of power that liberal governors such as Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan, Andrew Cuomo in New York, seek to wield against private citizens during this current pandemic is frightening. Contrary to their views, our federal constitutional rights don't go away in an emergency. These governors feel only a nominal constraint by our Constitution, as evidenced by the restrictions they have imposed on our liberty. Under the banner of public health, they believe that their power is plenary and that the Constitution has little role, if any, in curtailing that power. They are mistaken. Indeed, there is no pandemic exception to the fundamental liberties guaranteed by the Constitution. If the courts, and more importantly, we the people who ultimately control the fate of these politicians at the ballot box, were to simply accept the governor's actions and acquiesce to their power grab, then it is the fiat of the governors and not the Constitution that is the supreme law of the land. We aren't willing to surrender our freedoms so easily. We filed multiple federal civil rights lawsuits against both governors in federal courts in Michigan and New York. In the final analysis, if we don't demand our God-given inalienable rights, then they will be lost. Fight for freedom or lose it. It's that simple. I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, bringing you this Faith and Freedom Minute. You can learn more about the American Freedom Law Center and its fight for your faith and freedom by visiting our website and liking us on Facebook.
Support for Ave Maria programming comes in part by CatholicCounselors.com. self-help resources and support from Catholic telecounselors from the privacy of home. CatholicCounselors.com, helping your faith, life, and relationships flourish.
Hi there, I'm Dr. Greg Popchak.
And I'm Lisa Popchak.
Research shows that when families openly live and share their faith together, they're more able to respond positively to the challenges they face every day.
So if you're looking for help in creating that joyful place where each member of your family experiences life as a gift from God, then you will want to check out our book, Discovering God Together, The Catholic Guide for Raising Faithful Kids.
You can find this book on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net.
Get more information on today's guest and download the program from the Ave Maria Radio website, AveMariaRadio.net. And when your local radio signal is out of reach, listen live on the Ave Maria Radio app.
Brought to you by the nonprofit Seton Home Study.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. My wife and I have used Seton Home curriculum for our homeschooling. One of the great things about it, you learn about your faith, not just in religion, but history and English and science and reading. Their curriculum uses saints as role models. I don't think they've used me yet. Children are prepared to rationally explain and defend their faith. It permeates the instruction. You want to give your kids not only a top-notch education, but an understanding of their faith as it permeates the subjects that matter in their lives. I don't know if there's too much better than Seton homeschooling. We used it a lot. You are the best teacher for all of that. Let Seton get right beside you and give you the material you need. Go to SetonHome.org. SetonHome.org.
And good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. With me, Dr. Monica Miller, looking at the authority of Mary. And this is a discussion occasioned by the upcoming Feast of the Assumption. And before we broke, you mentioned that the first sacrament really is related to the creation of Adam and Eve, because gender itself is sacramental,
right?
Meaning it makes visible some invisible realities. Why don't you elaborate on that?
In the beginning, with the creation of male and female, God has set up these sacramental signs by which the very covenant of redemption itself is spoken. So it's a divine language. So
in creation, you also, so in a sense, redemption is there in embryo, right?
Redemption, yes. I mean, if the fall had not occurred, the point would still be
right. That
God is in union with his people.
Yeah.
And there is a distinction between God and what is not God. Yet there is a unity and a harmony between what is different. And male and female sexuality speak that truth. And what I find remarkable is that jumping all the way over into St. Paul's letter to the Ephesians, chapter 5, verse number 32, he talks about how husbands should love their wives as Christ loved the church. Husbands are to love their own wives as they do their own bodies, and so on. And then he doesn't even introduce it. He just drops Genesis chapter 2, verse number 24, right into the middle of his text.
Yeah.
For this reason, a man shall leave his father and his mother and cling to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh.
Mm-hmm.
So you get the quote from Genesis, and then you get the ultimate exegesis. This is a great mystery,
right. Because
it refers to Christ and the church. Now, what has he just said?
Yeah.
I mean, you got to just stop right there. Because what has Paul just said? He says, at the very beginning of creation, male and female sexuality were designed and intended by God to speak this other truth, the unity between Jesus and the church. These are sacramental signs. They are absolutely sacred. And that means that your body, as male or female, has a transcendent meaning. It's not just biology, which maybe, by the way, we could improve on the biology.
Sure.
Okay, if it's just stuff.
Yeah.
It's just
yeah.
raw matter. It's just raw material. And our brain, our mind, our intellectual ingenuity could come along and fix the plumbing and make it better. You're messing with a sacramental sign.
Yeah.
And, of course, this is something that I think really only the Catholic Church can break this open. And needs to preach this to this broken culture that we have right now on this particular point.
I agree. I think there's a lack of loss of nerve, because the whole question of submission is frequently eliminated from our readings.
Well, that's right.
And
too.
That, we'll talk about that in just a few minutes. But it's part of the mystery is this idea of submission too, and St. Paul.
Right, but submission.
I think he's talking about mutual submission.
It's a mutual submission,
right.
But here's the thing. Submission in the Christian religion is not the submission
right.
of the Greco-Roman world.
No.
It is not subject or ruler-subject submission.
Right.
Okay? And look at when Ephesians 5 says, husbands should love their wives as Christ loved the church, he gave himself up for her.
Who's submitting to who there?
Well, my point being that female or the submission of the wife to the husband is based on a service that the husband has given to her. She can freely be submissive to the husband that is serving her
yeah.
as Christ offered himself up for the church. That's the model.
Yeah.
That's the male. That is male authority. In fact, I argue in my book, when we talk about authority, Jesus primarily exercises authority from the cross. So, how is Christ head to the church? He is head. His headship is absolutely, completely tied to sacrifice. Those two things do not exist separately. They are one. Oh, really, I would argue one and the same. If you're going to be a head, you're going to be a life giver, and to be a life giver means that you're going to sacrifice yourself for another.
Yeah. So the submission of wife to husband is because the husband is. It's presupposed that the husband has sacrificed.
He is
himself.
Serving her. He's not lording it over her.
In a sense, he's submitted to her well-being.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right.
So when you talk about Mary, you know, this the covenant between God and his people, in redemption, Mary is the voice of the human race, answering God back, if you will, making that human response. And I have this really cool quote. When you can use St. Augustine, you got to use him, okay? And so this is a quote from St. Augustine, one of his works, where he said, two parents have generated us for death.
Yeah.
Two parents have generated us for life. So who are the two parents that generated us for death? Adam and Eve.
Our original parents.
Okay.
Yeah.
But what parents have reversed the humanity of death?
Yeah.
Christ and Mary. They
Adam,
are partners.
Eve. Yeah.
Right. They are partners in the order of redemption.
This is the rebooting of the human race,
exactly.
So to speak.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Projecting us forward into redemption. And I think, okay, so then we got to ask ourselves, well, how is it that Mary is actually partnering with Jesus in the accomplishment of redemption? I think there tends to be a limited, impoverished view of Mary. Well, she's Jesus's mom,
right?
Okay?
Right.
And we kind of stop there because our idea of what does it mean to be a mom? It means you give birth to a child.
But she remains his mom.
She remains his mother.
We don't say, look,
exactly.
There's Mary. That was Jesus' mom. No, that's Mary. She is Jesus' mom.
Right.
Right.
All right. And so, again, my argument is, and I, if we can do a quick exegesis of the wedding at Cana, I can show listeners how this works.
This is an amazing moment.
Yeah. Oh, this is
in the history of redemption.
This
yeah.
is absolutely huge. So,
It's the first miracle in the Gospel of John, so it's important. It's placed important there.
Mary is not just the biological mother of the Redeemer. In order to get the second person of the Holy Trinity to operate in space and time, okay, you know, I need a body. This is how I got one.
Yeah, she's a conduit.
Yeah, yeah, she's just an instrument, right? Well, she's not just an instrument. She is instrumental, okay? Mm-hmm. So when we get to the wedding at Cana that's recorded in the Gospel of John. They're at a wedding. Mary is the one that notices there's a problem. Mm-hmm. The wine is running out. Okay, you cannot have this way. By the way, these weddings might go on for a day or two.
Yeah.
Okay, and we don't want the guests to be, you know, disgruntled, and we don't want an embarrassment for the bride and the groom. So Mary turns to Jesus, and she says, they have no more wine. Now, we have to pay attention, very, very close attention, because this is where things get, sadly,
there's a translation
wrong.
Problem.
A translation problem.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So Jesus, a lot of the translators of the Greek will translate Jesus' response to his mother this way. This is the wrong way. Woman, what does this concern of yours, how does it involve me? My hour has not yet come.
Right.
So how does this concern of yours involve me? Now notice, it's very subtle, but what's going on there? It looks as if Jesus is posing a separation between himself and his mom. Hey, this is your thing, not mine.
Yeah, I'm not
okay,
ready to go
on
stage
yet. Okay, my hour. And then the most important thing, my hour has not. Because Jesus sees that if I perform this miracle, your concern, okay, woman, mm-hmm. This will ultimately open up the path to the cross.
Right.
My hour, that's what is meant
that's
in the
right.
Gospel
that's
of John.
Right.
Okay, now, mm-hmm. anybody, I would like to recommend, please go buy a Greek interlinear Bible, okay, with the original Greek, and then you'll have the literal English translation under the Greek, mm-hmm. a powerful, wonderful tool.
Yep.
This is what it really says. Woman, how does this concern involve me and you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now we're together in yeah. the hour. My
it,
hour
it
has
like
not yet come.
You want me to interrupt my program here to get on with this wine thing?
Right. Like, it's me and you.
Yeah.
How does it?
Yeah.
So he's already put Mary. He's saying that she's his partner.
Yeah.
My hour has not yet come. Okay, yes, the hour is his hour. But notice something. She shares in that hour in the Gospel of John. He's not just saying woman there. Okay, this is the customary way. Okay, in the Gospel of John, the title for Mary as woman is theological.
Right.
And Mary is then, the next time we get to what it means for her to be woman, is at the foot of the cross.
She's the iconic woman.
What it means for her to be that woman, she's completed as mother to the church.
Mm-hmm.
Because, woman, behold thy son, John. John, behold thy mother.
Yeah.
Okay. So that, and her new Eve dimension, her new Eve role is fulfilled there. She is the new Eve to the new Adam. So Mary prompts Jesus to the cross. She leads him there.
Yeah.
And in fact, she does what Eve failed to do. Eve, what was her fault? Let me get Adam to mm-hmm. do my will.
Right. Right.
Okay. Let me get Adam into my program.
Mm-hmm.
And then they both fall together.
Right.
Here, the new Eve leads Jesus to do the Father's will, as painful as that
That's right.
will be, to lead him to the hour. Mm-hmm. And of course, what's the ultimate result of the miracle? His disciples believed in him,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And now we're headed to the cross.
Hold it there. This is great stuff. Dr. Monica Miller talking about the authority of Mary in this workup to the Feast of the Assumption this weekend. I'm Al Cresta. We'll be right back.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
If you believe in the power of prayer, Ave Maria Radio invites you to look at their website to submit a prayer request at avemariaradio.net. Your prayer requests are shared with hundreds at the Dominican Sisters of Mary, Mother of the Eucharist, the Servants of God's Love, the Monastery of the Blessed Sacrament Cloistered Nuns, the Family of Faith Apostolate, and the staff of Ave Maria Radio. Just go to avemariaradio.net and click on the Community tab to submit your prayer request today.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 15 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
Bishop Robert Barron.
Find out in any cultural situation, who's the Lord? There's somebody or some principle, some figure, some institution that has central importance in that culture. Whether it's king, whether it's the military, who knows what it is? Go up and down the centuries. What's the Lord? The declaration of the Lordship of Jesus will always be a challenge to whatever that reigning Lord happens to be. The Lord today is my personal freedom. I decide what my life is. I decide who I am. I decide everything from my gender to the ultimate meaning of my life. Now that personal freedom is so powerful that it's become the Lord. To evangelize the culture is therefore to challenge that and to say, no, it's not your own ego, not your own freedom that's Lord. Jesus determines the meaning of your life. Jesus is the center of your life, not your own freedom.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Remember the song, "You Gotta Have Hope"? All you really need is hope? Well, it's not all you need, but it is one of the three theological virtues. The Catholic Catechism tells us that hope helps us desire heaven and eternal life as our happiness. We trust in Jesus' promise while relying not just on our own strengths, but with the assistance extended by grace from the Holy Spirit. Hope keeps discouragement at bay and sustains us in times of abandonment. It preserves us from selfishness by leading us to the happiness that flows from charity. Christian hope unfolds from Jesus' preaching of the Beatitudes, which raises our hope to heaven as the new promised land. The Catechism says hope is expressed and nourished in prayer, especially the Our Father, the summary of everything that hope leads us to desire. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
And good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. With me, Dr. Monica Miller. Looking at the authority of Mary, as we move towards the Assumption, you gave us a good look at the miracle of Cana, and Mary's real participation in that. His hour has not yet come, but really it's their hour had not yet come.
Yes, their hour.
And this leads me to go back all the way to Simeon, who predicted the hour. Why don't you go ahead and...
Yes. Yeah. The presentation of Jesus in the temple recorded in the Gospel of Luke. It's a very fascinating episode. What's interesting, and maybe, I don't know, I suppose you could say somewhat sad, is that Joseph is really persona non grata. It's like he's not even there. So you have the presentation of Jesus in the temple for his circumcision. And after the ceremony is completed, Simeon, the old prophet, moved by the Holy Spirit, recognizes in this tiny baby that the Messiah has come. And now, O Lord, you can dismiss your servant in peace, yeah. For my eyes have seen your saving glory, and so on. And then he has this, frankly, kind of disturbing prophecy.
Yeah.
And it is addressed to Mary.
Yeah, yeah.
You can kind of picture, if you do if you're doing a meditation on that, that, you know, Mary is there holding that little baby, and Simeon says that Jesus will be the rise and the fall of many in Israel, a sign that shall be opposed. Now, some Bible translations say a sign that shall be contradicted. I even kind of like that better. Mm-hmm. A sign that shall be So now what Simeon is breaking open in for the future is there's going to be struggle, strife, conflict.
Right.
And you too, says to Mary. You can even see him looking right at her.
Yeah.
And you too shall be pierced by a sword. So in other words, the suffering of Christ, this sign that shall be contradicted, his rejection, his crucifixion, his being consigned with criminals, mm-hmm. being completely misunderstood, the sign that shall be contradicted, you too, Mary, will share in that suffering. You too shall be pierced by a sword. And he could have kind of left it there. But the fact that Simeon adds something, there's a consequence to Mary's being pierced by a sword. What is the consequence? So that the thoughts of many hearts may be laid bare. Now, what on earth does that even mean?
Yeah.
Okay, it's very difficult to penetrate the meaning of that phrase. I think there are two possible interpretations, and both of them go to the authority of Mary. So when Simeon says, you will share in the suffering of your son, it's interesting. He doesn't say that Joseph is going to share
that
in
it is
right? Or any of the Pharisees or the Sadducees who might have been around because they performed the ceremony. Nobody else. Only her.
Yeah. Well, she's donated her life substance to this new
right.
body.
They are one in that suffering, right. And so you too shall be pierced by a sword. And so, what is it? And as a consequence of your suffering, Mary, with your son, the thoughts of many hearts may be laid bare. So, here's what I think that means.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, who wants the thoughts? Do you want to know the thoughts of my heart, and I want to know the thoughts of yours? You know, they might not look so good.
Yeah, this is one of the reasons we have bodies to protect us from that.
Okay, so what the statement is really saying is that because of who Mary is, because she shared in the suffering of her son, she will become the measure of what it means to follow him, so that the truth about you, Al,
mm-hmm.
and the truth about me is going on. The inner truth of who we are is going to be measured against her truth.
Mm-hmm.
The thoughts of my heart will be laid bare, exposed in comparison with Mary, who is the ultimate disciple.
Yeah.
So she's the measure, she's the model, she's the standard of what it means to follow Jesus being pierced by a sword when he is the rejected Messiah.
I think a lot of people think of her as a passive observer, through, you know, she births him, and then...
And that's it. That's the end of her contribution.
She has that one incident with Joseph where he's found in the temple, you know, he's lost. And you almost get the impression that when that's over, they look at each other and they say, you know, he's grown up. He's we got to let him grow. Yeah, give him another year with us, and then he's on his own. But the way you're laying this out, it's clear that through his earthly ministry, she was not a mere passive observer.
Yeah, and against,
she's aware of what's going
and
on.
And against her... She's the standard of discipleship, and so our discipleship, the thoughts, the inner truth about us will be measured against her. And then I do think, though, there's a second possible, but neither, these two interpretations are not, they don't contradict each other. Because of her suffering, because she knows what it means to suffer, I indeed can lay bare my inner thoughts to her.
Right.
Yeah. So as a consequence of your suffering, Mary, the thoughts of many hearts can be laid bare to you. Your children can come to you.
Mm-hmm.
You
mm-hmm.
know what it means to suffer and to see your children or your child suffer. So I think the two things go together. She's the measure of what it means to follow Jesus, and will be, you know, did we measure up, okay,
yeah.
To her discipleship?
That's right.
Okay, the truth of who we are in comparison with her, but also that because of her suffering, the thoughts of we can open up our hearts, we can lay bare our hearts to Mary.
And of course, this goes back to her acceptance at the fiat at the very beginning.
Exactly.
That's where she shows she's the model disciple. Be it done to me according to your word.
Right. And here's why I really love that, because it's not just in a sense, well, it's not just, quote unquote, right, just that she's accepting to become the mother of Jesus. But what really is going on there, in addition to that, in the beginning, and we're talking about the beginning, chapter 1 of the book of Genesis, God says yes to creation. Mm-hmm. Let it be.
Yes.
Let there be light. Let there be the creeping things.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Let there be the fish in the ocean and the birds of the air. And let there be. So there's God's fiat, God's yes to the world.
Mm-hmm.
Now, creation in Mary literally is answering him back.
Yeah.
Let it be done to me.
Yeah.
Right? So there's a new creation. Yeah, a new creation between God and the world, and Mary is the spokeswoman for the human race. She's representing the human race at the foot of the cross because she is the proto-church.
Yeah. In this, again, shows... gives us a much richer understanding of authority, and it's much easier to see Mary's authority with this broader understanding of her participation as the ultimate disciple, the one who is tied up with Jesus's hour to come. And is this... how widespread is this kind of understanding of Mary's role in salvation history?
I think for the well-informed and devout Catholic, I think it's at least implicit.
Yeah.
We know that she is the reason why salvation happened. She said yes.
She's the hinge.
Yes.
It all turns on that acceptance.
Right. And... you know, this beautiful comparison between Jesus and Mary. I think it's in the Gospel of Mark. I could have it wrong, but it's in one of the four, where Mary Magdalene is in the tomb, and the angel says to her, to Mary Magdalene, why are you looking for the living one among the dead? Sort of like, what are you doing here? Okay, why are you looking for the living one among the dead? But you go back to Genesis, the end of chapter 2, even after sin has infected the human race, Adam called his wife Eve because... she became the mother of all the living.
Yeah.
So there's that partnership with Jesus is the living one, mm-hmm. but Eve, and then of course the new Eve, Mary is indeed truly the mother of all the living. What does that mean? She's the mother of all those who are reborn in Christ.
Yeah.
Baptism.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Well, we've got about 3 minutes left, and so I wanted to get to the what the bodily assumption. First of all, why is it bodily? Mm-hmm. And that's critical. And what that speaks to her role as the Queen of Heaven.
Mary knows, has gone before us as completely, she's completed. She's finished.
Yes.
She's whole. What the assumption of Mary indicates is really an anthropology about what does it mean to be human.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we might expect that, well, even some would not expect this necessarily. If you're a Gnostic, you certainly wouldn't expect it or even want it, that Jesus' resurrection from the tomb is a true, literal, bodily, physical rising from the dead.
Yeah.
Okay, the body born from Mary, the body that cured people and raised them from the dead, the body that was in front of Pontius Pilate, the body that hung on the cross is the one that is now in heaven. He is raised up completely, and he has not shed his body.
She donated that body.
Oh, yes, exactly. And that's why there's, well, I know there's no time to get into this, but there's a Marian dimension to the Eucharist.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
As a consequence of that.
Mm-hmm.
But what Mary's not God.
Right.
She's a human being. But Mary's assumption tells us that, first of all, gender is important to human identity. It's not shed. You don't become something else. And to be truly whole and redeemed means that your soul and body mm-hmm. are fulfilled.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's Christianity, whether you like it or not.
Yeah. No, there's no escaping it. There's no turning the resurrection into just a promise of personal immortality.
Well, that or, you know, it was an illusion, or they felt Jesus was alive in their hearts.
Right.
Oh, please.
Now, these are Christianity and Catholicism in particular is a very material religion.
Yes.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
For sketching this out for us. Again, sexuality and authority of women.
Sexuality and authority in the Catholic Church.
In the Catholic Church.
And then the other book is The Authority of Women.
Dr. Right. Monica Miller. We'll have them available for you in the online bookstore there. So thanks, Monica.
Thank you.
This Ave Maria program is brought to you in part by the nonprofit CMF Curo. Your search for affordable health care stops here. Since 2014, CMF Curo has provided Catholics with affordable health care sharing that goes beyond insurance. With programs that cost less than many COBRA and ACA-sponsored plans, CMF Curo is a Catholic health sharing experience that enables you to live fully alive while saving money. Call 1-833-GET-CURO to find affordable Catholic health care now. That's 1-833-GETCURO.
Dr. Ray Guarendi.
What's the definition of frustration? Frustration is the difference between the way it is and the way you want it to be. It's hard to change the way it is. The way it is sometimes is other people, life, circumstances. The way you want it to be is in your power to change. You can close the gap between reality and what you want. The smaller that gap, the less your frustration. It is always easier to change oneself than to change reality. Frustration isn't always what happens out there. It is how we look at what happens out there.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically own shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs.
Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Well, thank you so much. It's been great being with you over the last 2 hours, and let me remind you that you can follow up on any of our conversations today by going to AveMariaRadio.net. Go to the Crested Guest Archives. We'll have follow-up information on all of our topics, our guests, any articles used in preparation of the interviews. And then the books that we mentioned on this program, of course, always available in the online bookstore. Dr. Miller's books, The Authority of Women in the Catholic Church and Sexuality and Authority in the Catholic Church, we'll have available for you there. Just again, head on over to AveMariaRadio.net. Tomorrow, I'm going to be tied up in meetings, and so good friend Jerry Usher will be sitting in for me for this next edition of Crest in the Afternoon. As I go off the air right now, we've got Catholic Answers Live coming up. I hope you'll stay tuned for that. It's an open forum. Jimmy Akin will be there. And again, I'll be looking forward to being back with you live next Monday for this next edition of Crest in the Afternoon. See you then.
Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. To follow up on any of the guests or information presented on today's program, visit the Cresta Guest Archive at AveMariaRadio.net. That's A-V-E-M-A-R-I-A Radio.net. To listen to this or any other edition of Cresta in the Afternoon, visit the audio archives at AveMariaRadio.net. Or to order a CD of the program, call 734-930-4506 or email orders at AveMariaRadio.net. That's 734-930-4506 or orders at AveMariaRadio.net.